This week, we welcome Molly McLean Sterling, Director of Security Culture at Medtronic, to discuss ambassadors, the power in the people. In our second segment, we air the last two pre-recorded interviews from Axonius and Brinca at RSA Conference 2023. Business Security Weekly starts now.
This is a Security Weekly production for security professionals by security professionals. Please visit securityweekly.com/subscribe to subscribe to all the shows on our network. Broadcasting live from G-Unit Studios in Rhode Island, it's the show where we explore the business of security to improve the security of business. Your trusted source for actionable insights on leadership, communication, and innovation. Get ready for Business Security Weekly.
Files are the lifeblood of business, and your employees will open the files they need to do their jobs, whether they're safe or not. With Votero, your employees will only open files that are safe. Votero applies zero trust principles to files and sanitizes every incoming file for your organization. Known and unknown threats are removed instantly, and the file retains full functionality, so your business is safe and productivity never slows down. And it's not just for email. The Votero Cloud API works on web downloads, file uploads, cloud apps, FTP, and content collaboration portals. Learn more at securityweekly.com/Votero. According to the 2022 Data Breach Investigations Report, the human remains the number one driver of breaches today, demonstrating that cybersecurity is no longer just a technical challenge, but a human one as well. But how do you manage the human risks of cybersecurity? It starts with measurement. Only by effectively quantifying human risk can organizations engage employees with relevant activities to truly change human behavior. That's human risk management. Map key human behaviors to the business risks that matter most to your organization for free by visiting securityweekly.com/livingsecurity. Welcome to Business Security Weekly. This is episode number 306, recorded May 15th, 2023. I am your host, Matt Alderman. Joining me today is only one co-host. I had two bail on me today, power outages and incident response stuff. But Tyler Robinson, he's always here to support me. Welcome, Tyler.
Good to be here, Matt. Always here for you, buddy. I may be the backup or, you know, third string or whatever, but hey.
You bring great insights. I don't consider you third string at all. You're here more than most of us, I think, actually. Security Weekly community, our teams from Security Weekly and SC Media were on site at RSA Conference 2023. Delivering in-depth reporting, analysis, and interviews from the conference. If you were unable to join us in person or didn't manage to catch our video live stream from Broadcast Alley, access all of our RSA Conference 2023 coverage, including video interviews with leaders from the community, by visiting securityweekly.com/RSAC. Molly McLean Sterling has been with Medtronic, the world's largest medical technology company, since 2007. She is currently the Director of Security Culture, reporting to the CISO. In her 15 years at Medtronic, Molly has brought to fruition a number of large ongoing initiatives, including security customer engagement processes, training reaching over 100,000 people in over 150 countries, phishing simulation programs, security ambassadors program, which we're going to talk about today, and a security metrics and analytics program, just to name a few. She is very active in the security culture community, serving on the SANS 2019 and 2020 Security Awareness Summit Advisory Board, co-founding the Midwest Security Awareness Group, and was nominated for a SANS Difference Maker of the Year Award in 2022. Molly, welcome to Business Security Weekly.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Now, I have to confess, you've worked with my CEO, Ashley Rose, and I saw you present with her around aspects of your ambassador program. And I said, oh my gosh, I got to bring you on to the show because I need you to teach other people about what you've done at Medtronic and help them build an ambassador program. But before we go into there, I want to start with your title a little bit. It's an interesting title. It's Director of Security Culture. You don't see that title very often. Let's start with, what are the roles and responsibilities of a Director of Security Culture?
Sure. I do get that a lot, actually. When people see my title, they want to learn more about it because it's pretty cool. The responsibilities center for sure with security awareness. So that's always been the foundation. And then as we've grown the program over the last decade or so, it's expanded from security awareness to stakeholder engagement as well, and then to the metrics and analytics piece. So the stakeholder engagement piece is really making sure on another level that we have trusted relationships with all of our business partners, and that they're able to navigate through the Global Security Office with ease and as efficiently as possible. So that's a piece of that. Just the core of everything is building trust and building positive relationships, so that when we do need to negotiate or pin risks against the goods and the bads, we're able to do that with speed and decisiveness.
When you think about the stakeholder portion of this, I mean, obviously you have to build trust, but I'm sure there's sharing of information back and forth. Like if I'm a business leader and it behooves me to like know where my potential risks are in the environment, did the stakeholder part come first? Did the metrics piece come first? Because I think metrics are a very important piece of building some of that trust and relationship with the stakeholders in the business, isn't it?
Yeah. The stakeholder piece was really interesting. It was a total move by our CISO to notice, not fight against people's opposition to security. So this is a great way that I think about it is 4 or 5 years ago, if I would have introduced myself to someone at Medtronic, there's 100,000 people, so you're always meeting someone new. And I said, oh, I work with security group. They'd go, oh, and they'd have that like withdrawn. I don't want to talk to this person. Now, when I say I work with the security group, they're like, oh, the ambassador program. I want to talk to you about that. It's such a cool program. So our CISO saw that about 4 or 5 years ago and addressed it head on. Instead of fighting back against it, instead of saying that's not true or whatever, he said, okay, we're going to put our stakeholders at the center of everything, and we're going to just listen and hear your pain points. And then we're going to adjust our processes and our different relationships to try and improve. And it made a world of difference. And I think our relationships and our relationships in general have just improved so much over the last 4 or 5 years.
I was waiting to see if Tyler went.
I'm curious how the, I was trying to find the stupid unmute from the kind of stakeholders and getting everybody on board. What do you usually advise or provide from an advice standpoint for people just getting started with kind of this new role, or even if they're not officially getting a title around this role, how do you propose that they start building those trusts and interoperability and cooperation and getting those stakeholders all on the same page with a mission? What's the starting point for that?
Yeah, it's a great question. So there's two super easy things to do. And the first one is listen. Set up sessions with the people that you need to build relationships with and just listen. Tell them, you get to vent for half an hour. I'm not going to fight against anything that you're talking about. I'm not going to try to defend anything. Just tell me everything that you want to get off your chest. And then continue to have those conversations and look for the themes that you see across. Are there pain points that are the same with multiple people that you're talking about? And then you'll be able to zone in on certain areas to get the best bang for your buck right away. And the second piece with stakeholders, whenever you're writing a communication or you're giving a presentation or you're trying to convince somebody of something, stop coming to it from a security lens. Start thinking of it, what's in it for them? Always ask what's in it for them. And if you don't know what's in it for them, you need to ask and you need to listen.
The business,
you have to be a people
business
person.
Purview. and understand the business aspects of business and business
exactly.
Pain and what the business wants. Yeah.
Exactly. Yep. If you don't know, that's when you should be asking and listening.
So when did the journey start? You said 4 to 5 years ago, the journey started for Medtronic. The CISO wanted to really change the way security was perceived. So I assume you started with these sessions, right? Like, listen. But then how did the program start to roll out from there? Like, I want to get into some of the details about kind of what it looks like, what you do on a daily, weekly basis. But how long did it take you to go from these listening sessions to understand what people really were worried about and wanted to understand to how did you start to formalize then an ambassador program?
It all kind of happened at once. So really, I'd have to say preface the 4 to 5 years with 5 years before that, just having the traditional security awareness program. So I started as a team of one doing security awareness, got a few more people. Now I have three full-time people doing security awareness. From there, I took on, I believe, three more folks. At least right now, I have three more folks doing stakeholder engagement specific work, helping people, you know, navigate through the Global Security Office with their projects, with their risk assessments, figuring out, do I need identity and access management? Do I need cloud help? Do I need vendor risk assessment? Whatever it may be. And so with that stakeholder piece, that's when our CISO came to me and said, I want to create a stakeholder engagement role and elevate the security awareness group to include stakeholder engagement and have you report to me on my leadership team. And so I think that as well elevated it. And so this is a note for the CISOs. Our program was able to be so successful because our CISO put the human element equal to all of the technical elements and the cyber aspect. That human element had to be elevated and had to be given an equal seat at the table. And we were able to grow our program so much faster. I'd say we're probably in our sixth year of the ambassador program. And we did a complete revamp. You know, it's been a learning process that 3 years in or so, we said, this is kind of stale. It's not quite working. And I know we're going to get into a lot of the details with the ambassador program and just how we had to shift in 2020 and things like that. But I would say probably a year in after we started the stakeholder engagement group, we started to see other stakeholder engagement groups pop up in other IT organizations. So we knew that what we were doing was worth replicating. And I think that was a good indicator.
How do you begin that conversation with the executive, kind of that top-down leadership approach when you don't have, say, a CISO that is proactive and kind of buying into this? What are the conversations and the business terminology that you would use to show a return on investment, show a worthwhile cause, and begin to build those FTEs into something that the business can use and appropriately allocate time and resources to?
Yeah, that's a great question. I've been really blessed throughout my career to have support. So I don't have a ton of struggle, I guess. And I think you have to show your resourcefulness. So you can't come in, our CISO often says, you know, we don't have we're not going to have a busload of people or a bucket of money. So we have to be resourceful with what we have, and we have to be responsible with what we have, because we're taking money away from another group, you know, within IT or within the company, if we're going to be asking for funds. So as I was a team of one, and I did a lot of things and got very efficient at everything that I could, and then I could say, here's the extra things I'll be able to do. This is how many more things I can do if I can have one person. And then finding, a lot of times I find internal talent. Majority of the folks on my team have had some type of experience with our IT support center or IT help desk. And those people in those situations are phenomenal resources, especially at a big company like Medtronic. They know the company really, really well. And then I can teach them security. We can teach them security awareness. But knowing the company is hard enough, and they have those connections and they have that already.
Yeah, that's great, because we also talk about the whole skills gap challenge and where do you find the skills? You've been finding them internally, which is awesome, to bring them over and then teach them the security side.
Absolutely. And I mean, they have wowed me beyond measure. My team is phenomenal.
So let's talk about the day-to-day of an ambassador program, because I'm curious, like, how much commitment, how much time, what are the activities? You said you've had to revamp the program. So kind of start out, what did the initial program kind of look like for that first year to 3 years, right? Because you said about 3 years and you had to shift. Yeah. Kind of what did the program look like then?
Sure. So it all started because I went to the SANS course on, you know, how to build a security awareness program. And they said, you need an ambassador program. So I was like, okay, I'll have an ambassador's program. This is when I was team of one. I think I had some part-time support. And it was a ton of work. It was really hard. I would say that I had a check the box program at that point. There wasn't a ton of interaction with the ambassadors, or back and forth. We would have half hour sessions, and we're a global company and we want it to be a global opportunity. So it would all be, you know, at that time it was on WebEx. This is when nobody used their cameras, anything like that. So it's just listening to somebody talk for an hour, and I would do it in three different time zones once a month. So it was definitely exhausting. We got to the point where when I got more staff and they took on a lot of those responsibilities, which was wonderful, but we got to the point where we had some issues with some folks that kept sort of trying to steal the stage when we would be having our ambassador sessions, trying to get whatever sort of agenda they wanted to get out. And it was pretty distracting. And so that was the catalyst for us to say, well, how can we make that not happen again, and not have somebody sort of like steal the spotlight onto whatever other issue they wanted to talk about. And I told the team, just, I want you to go out to YouTube and I want you to watch any kind of video that you can possibly think of. So we watched makeup tutorials. We watched how to change your oil. We watched how to cook spaghetti, you know, anything, just to see if we could get our creative juices flowing. And then the folks on my team came back and gave me sort of this pilot episode, and it was so cool. It was exactly what I had somewhere floating in my mind, but they brought it to fruition. And so basically we have an episode that drops each month. And within the episode, there's interactive challenges, there's quizzes, and not annoying quizzes like we're going to test your knowledge on encryption or something like that. They're more fun. And there's one of the challenges is a scavenger hunt. And so instead of just giving you this boring list of resources, you have to go through the scavenger hunt all around the internet and intranet and find the resources, and people love it. And then we have a Teams channel, and that sounds super basic, but what ended up happening was just this sort of grassroots effort of folks just started talking more and engaging more, and social proof, positive social proof took over, thank goodness. And it was amazing. We had people so excited. We had people doing things for us that we didn't even ask for. Somebody like translated all these materials into a language for their particular country and shared it with, you know, the entire country in of the Medtronic staff. People were holding sessions on their own to share the knowledge that they learned in that particular episode. And it just went on and on and on. And then we also started doing ambassadors of the month and ambassador of the year. So then the competition piece started coming in, and it's just been phenomenal. And the way we do it is from August to April is the year that you're an ambassador. And you have a certain amount of tasks and episodes and things like that to watch. And if you can complete the necessary amount, then you graduate and you become an alumni. And you're an alumni in perpetuity. And that's a separate group. And they get more advanced things. And you get to continue on in the program. And so that's just a way that we can, like you talked about, that pipeline. It's growing that pipeline of, here's, we're going to start with base knowledge, and then we can expand into things like encryption and things that are a little bit more difficult, I think, for the novice to grasp.
Have you found good applications and or programs that allow and facilitate and gamify this where maybe they don't have the resources to build some of this? Obviously, Teams sounds like a great place. Someone has to manage that and handle that. But have you seen actual applications that take this ambassador idea and kind of gamify it and offer a all-in-one solution that leverages the passion that you're bringing to the table with some of the free tools?
Yeah, I haven't really. And I think it's a great point to bring up because that's one of the pieces, like when I talked about being resourceful, we don't ask for any additional tools for this. This is, we want this program to be as low cost as possible because we're not charging anybody at Medtronic. You know, there's no intercompany charges or anything. And it's truly a development program. You're going to advance your skills. You're going to be able to have the opportunity to put this on your resume on LinkedIn. And besides just the practical use and knowledge that you can bring to your family. So we want to make sure that it's as low cost as possible. And so we are pretty scrappy with the way that we do it. You know, we use Teams, the whatever tools we use to actually build our annual trainings and things like that. We figure out how to use those, whatever enterprise tools that are available. We'll use that. So it's a lot of kind of like scrimping and scramping and trying things. And sometimes they don't work and sometimes they do. It's really just an experiment.
So Molly, it sounds like you moved away from Zoom sessions more to kind of pre-canned episodes and yes, interaction through Teams channel. Do they still network in a live format, like a virtual meeting environment, or is everything done now through the Teams channel and through these episodes?
Yeah, everything's pretty much done through the Teams channel and the episodes. And then they do a handful of live events throughout the year. So then those are like special events. And it, rather than having this monthly thing that feels like a burden, it's, oh, this special thing. I finally get to interact like face-to-face, you know, Zoom to Zoom, I guess, with the people that I've been talking to for the last couple of months and things. And so it builds that excitement. And we were worried that not having the live Zoom sessions on a regular basis would be a hindrance, but it has been the opposite. We had our ambassador of the year this year said this was, he's been with the company for many, many years, and this was the first time he had ever actually worked with a truly global group. And he's out in Ireland. And so that was just so cool and meaningful that we were a global company, and this is the first time that you got to have that experience of working with a ton of different other colleagues and companies. And it's just really neat.
Positive culture. Now, do you have to be nominated, or do you nominate yourself to be an ambassador? Like, how do you get new ambassadors into the pipeline?
This is the incredible part. Before, it would be us going out and recruiting, just like anything else. Hey, anybody in the company, if you are an employee, doesn't matter what level you are, doesn't matter what role you are, anything, come and be in this program. Now we're to the point where we have such word of mouth that we have a wait list that starts basically day two of the year and is, I don't know, 175, 200 people full waiting to get into the program. So we'll still do another push, just sort of like an announcement to make sure that everybody knows about it. But really, they're coming to us versus us going out and trying to pull them in.
That's awesome. I mean, again, yeah, positive culture.
We're astounded. We're just astounded. Like, you know, it's one of those things, you have these dreams sort of in the back of your head, and then it's better than we dreamed. So we're just kind of like, just all smiles when it comes to this program.
Gee, this seems exact opposite from most of the security awareness training and or programs that most people tend to endure, I think is probably the nicest word I can come up with. But
yeah,
having this replace many of the traditional security awareness, security training, the things that people just have to endure and muddle their way through, I think this is a much better approach that actually provides value at the same time of kind of checking that box for the security awareness and yearly training that everybody's always having to dread.
Yeah. And we did, to be fair, we do that too. You know, we have our compliance type training that covers a huge amount of topics in a very short window that everybody does, that's translated into, you know, 25 languages or whatever it is, and deployed. This, though, builds that personal relationship with the folks that are in it. And it's so cool to read the feedback. There's people that have said, oh, I got this email and I knew what to do and I verified with my bank and I stopped this. And I'm like, you stopped a crime. You stopped a crime from happening because you were able to learn the things that you did in this and protect yourself. Somebody will talk about how it impacted their family because they shared this information with their family. We'll have people that say, oh, now I know who to talk to within the global security office for all of the project needs that I have. That's great, because there's a lot of people, it's 100 and some people within the global security office, you know, with many different specialties. So having that ability to say, okay, I know I need to go to this group for my needs. It just speeds everything up, makes us be able to be so much more efficient and business focused.
It's amazing. Now, obviously, you delivered a lot of this remotely over the past few years. Does the program shift to some live in-person stuff now that people are, it sounds like you're going back into the office more, a little more? Yeah. Like, does that warrant, you know, some changes in how people network and get together? Like, will you see live events?
Yeah. So, we're right on the cusp of experimenting. I'm really big into experimenting. Like, let's try it. We like to rock the boat a little bit. We like to be first out and fail fast and just kind of keep trying things until we get it and something clicks. And so my team informed me that we are having a live ambassador meetup in Minnesota tomorrow, I think it is. So we'll see how it goes. I'll let you know. I'll report back. But I envision something like that with our alumni networks in a lot of different areas around the world. And our dream, someday we'll get it, is to bring all of our ambassadors and alumni together for a conference every year. Someday, we're going to keep dreaming, when budgets allow, that we'd be able to do that.
Well, I think that's great that you use, well, because you have so many alumni probably now, 6 years into the program, they're all around the world. Doing regional meetups is a great way to get all the regional folks together. And then, like you said, if you can extend it into one time a year to get everybody together, that would kind of be a cool little conference.
Oh my gosh. I'll probably cry. Like, I would just think it would be like so amazing to see all the different, just the diversity of knowledge, of thought, of life, of roles, all having the same mission. And makes me excited, hopeful.
Tyler, I have one more question for Molly, but I wanted to see if you had any additional questions before I ask this one final question.
I think the only other question I was thinking about was, from an organizational standpoint, have you seen this position fall underneath of any other executive that either makes sense or does not make sense as far as beginning to build this program and structure it and having the top-down leadership support? The CISO makes a lot of sense. CTO obviously probably makes a little bit of sense. But have you seen this done differently between other organizations where something else might fall into line with a different group, maybe HR or one of the others?
Yeah, I think, you know, regardless of where it falls, it needs to partner really well with HR and security and communications. So whatever skill set or wherever the structure lands is probably less important than who you're going to make those strong relationships with. But I do think it's really great to report to the CISO. I think it's just such a phenomenal opportunity to be able to hear and listen the challenges that they have from the technical side and try to bring that human element to it. It's such a fantastic learning opportunity.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, HR would be the other potential area for this. But so my last question, if there's one thing you could change early on, what would it have been to get to where you are today, to maybe even speed the process up a bit?
Great question. I would say that just knowing that we don't have to do it live, I definitely thought we had to do it live, and that that was the only way that we were going to get really connected with our stakeholders. But switching to that, come as you are and come as you can, that really, really helped.
That's awesome. Molly, thank you so much for joining us on Business Security Weekly.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
We're going to take a quick break and then air two pre-recorded interviews from RSA Conference 2023.
Mimecast has released its State of Ransomware Readiness Report for 2022, finding that most cybersecurity leaders experienced the same or increasing numbers of ransomware attacks over last year. Together with Mimecast, organizations can stand strong in the face of cyber attacks, human error, technical failure, and work protected. Mimecast, work protected. Visit securityweekly.com/Mimecast to learn more. How do you win the race against risk and safely lock down your cloud data without hiring an army of administrators? Introducing Least Privilege Automation, only from Varonis. Varonis eliminates data exposures while your employees work and while they sleep, making intelligent decisions about who needs access to data and who doesn't. Our cloud-native solution analyzes permissions and sharing links, monitors access activity, and classifies sensitive data. Because Varonis knows who can and who does access critical data, our automation safely remediates risky links and permissions. Learn more at securityweekly.com/Varonis.
Hi, folks. I'm Adrian Sanabria, the host of Enterprise Security Weekly. Every week, we interview the most interesting folks we can find, talking about the most pressing cybersecurity issues and challenges facing the enterprise today. Myself and my co-hosts have each been in the industry for decades, long enough to see the patterns in the industry and explore where trends are going. In addition to enterprise challenges, we also follow the vendor space, the most interesting security startups emerging, technology and product trends, all the most interesting funding and acquisition announcements. Finally, we love to discuss the latest trends in tech and how they'll impact cybersecurity. If you're wondering how the latest in AI, quantum computing, cloud, and DevOps is going to impact security a few years down the road, you should follow the Enterprise Security Weekly podcast.
Welcome to RSA 2023. It is day three. Some of us are running on fumes. Some of us haven't quite gotten our stamina back, having taken a few years off. But we are live at Broadcast Alley, and I'd like to introduce Mayuresh Ektare. He is Senior Vice... Did I do all right on that? Perfect. He is Senior Vice President of Product Management for a company called Brinca. Mayuresh, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me this morning.
Tell us a little bit about Brinca.
Certainly. Brinca centralizes findings and vulnerabilities from various security tools in our organization to really provide a centralized, unified view into the cybersecurity risk. We essentially help the cybersecurity teams to understand, contextualize, and prioritize cyber risk so that they can effectively communicate inside the organization and also remediate with precision.
Okay.
That's what Brinca really does.
So I wanted to talk a little bit today about sort of the challenge that security teams face in organizations and smaller organizations where the team is just one person. I've been consulting for almost 30 years in the private sector, and I can remember 30 years ago trying to convince companies in the private sector that they need to have a strategic approach to how to do security, how to make the organization secure. And of course, 30 years ago, the big argument was you really need to have a firewall if you're going to plug into this backbone called the internet.
Right.
There's been a challenge, I think, since day one in trying to get organizations to approach things strategically. They tended to look towards the tools and find all the tools and the solutions.
Right.
And now what do they have today, Mayuresh?
Exactly. They have more tools, right?
More tools.
In larger organizations, we often deal with customers who have deployed north of sometimes 50 different security solutions. It isn't unheard of, having tooling at that scale. Mm-hmm. The challenge really is, if you take some analogies, right, and apply to some other functions inside an organization, think CRM. No one in their mindset would actually build out a process in an organization without first deploying a CRM. So they're really thinking of what the eventual process in my organization is going to be like, and then you build out your tooling for that process. Instead, in cybersecurity, what happens is, you first start thinking immediately about, do I have an endpoint security solution? Do I have a firewall? Do I have a cloud security solution? And there's just an explosion of tooling. Mm-hmm. It's when things become really unmanageable, that's when CISOs and CIOs start really thinking about, how do I put this plan together, right?
Right.
Instead, if you start off with a strategic approach, really thinking about, this is how I'm going to orchestrate the entire cybersecurity platform, you will pretty much be in a much better position than individual tools that are, stitched together not in a very right way.
Right. Well, and unfortunately, most companies have been around for a while, and the idea of starting with strategy is, that ship's kind of sailed.
That's true.
The trick is, and I do consulting, I'm advising, I'm not in there trying to push any particular solution, but I've been to so many companies over the years that, I've been to things like RSA, walked the floor, and got all these solutions, because how can I live without them? The person said, I must have this. And the trade rags and the social media platforms all say, I've got to do this. It's the next big thing. Yep. And so that shiny object times 100 sometimes is there. And it's interesting that you're using analogies of other parts of the business. How many things in life or in business do you start with dropping a product in, dropping a solution in before you figure out what you want to do with it? But that's time and time again been the reality in this industry.
Very true, very true. But then there is also few additional things in cybersecurity, certain parts of cybersecurity that we can actually take advantage of. Think of the SOC, the modern SOC today. Mm-hmm. The SOC was sort of evolved when customers were not able to really make sense of hundreds and thousands of events that were generated by these tools.
Right.
So there had to be a place where you centralize, aggregate, correlate for threat detection and response.
Right.
SOC was born. Now, SOC is more on threat detection and remediation, right? Post-attack. Someone's trying to attack, here are the events, let's correlate and figure out what the root cause was.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what can the organizations do to reduce their exposure so that they don't get attacked in the first place, right? Is there a place for us to aggregate the exposure and the findings data early on in a centralized repository so that these findings can be prioritized in a more effective way, which are more contextualized for the business to reduce the exposure, right? So that's the viewpoint that we personally take, there isn't a framework or an orchestration play to really understand the entire attack surface and reduce the exposure. You have to close the attack surface today and fix the exposure if you want to prevent the attacks of tomorrow.
Right, which ironically is an application of principles of security and protection that date back 30, 40, 50 years. I mean, the whole original idea of internet security was based on a principle of perimeter protection.
Right.
Put the wall around the castle
and
pull everybody in and protect your most precious assets are in the innermost bowels of the castle. And figure out how many doors and windows are into the castle and close them. As I said, I'm a consultant. I've been using the analogies for years and years and years. But and it's funny to me that, we got all these sensors, we got all these data points, and now we have to figure out what to do with it. We got what we asked for.
Right.
Talk to me a little bit about how you, how Brinca allows your clients to begin to kind of sort it out. Because again, from a strategic perspective, what are some tips or ideas of how to start to prioritize all that data?
The challenge really comes about when you've got really varying asset types and asset classes.
Mm-hmm.
In an organization, the IT infrastructure is oftentimes owned by the CIO or the IT teams, right? You know, then there is a cloud infrastructure. You've got your containers, you've got your applications, you've got your IoT devices, operating, the operational technology, what have you. Each one of these specialized asset class has a specialized scanning tool dedicated for them. Right? The reason that even happens is, first of all, the technologies are different, but the secondly, most important thing is the ownership structure of these assets, right? There isn't a single owner who has the responsibility across all these asset types.
Right.
So the way we imagine customers really using a solution is to aggregate the risks that they see across all the attack surface. You know, regardless of what asset type you're looking at, from a business perspective, you really need to understand what your attack surface is across my asset types. And can I really understand what is important for my business today and prioritize those risks to close them? You know, that's the holy grail of really understanding what is important for your business. There are a few things that come about here in this approach. You know, you are looking at cybersecurity tools that are scanning these devices, you know, or understanding the vulnerabilities and findings. They're providing raw security data.
Right.
That raw security data really needs to be enhanced for business context. Unless you enrich that data and overlay the business context on it, you're never going to be able to identify what's important for me. You know, a vulnerability that is CVSS 5 or 6 may be really critical for me or my organization if that happens to be on an asset that is internet facing, you know, it has to be compliant. So the business considerations are often missing in the raw security data.
Right.
And what Brinker really allows our customers to do is understand the attack surface by having a comprehensive view of their assets. Understand the findings or the vulnerabilities, risks associated with each of those assets, and then allow customers to overlay that business context on top so that they can prioritize and communicate the risk at the very precise level.
Now, in my experience as a consultant, many of my clients, I'm an assessor, I do PCI, so I have to go in and make a determination of how well they're meeting a whole myriad of security controls and requirements, and a lot of it has to do with monitoring and detection. There's vulnerability scanning, there's vulnerability management, and so on and so forth. I've seen many companies over the years sort of, because they don't understand what all this data is, you know, specifically vulnerability discovery tools, vulnerability scan engines, they tend to respond to and do exactly what the tools tell them. But as you said, I mean, the context isn't always there, but there is a, you know, CVSS score, CVE score, and, you know, within PCI, PCI says, you know, highs and criticals, do something with them. What most people don't realize is that PCI says, oh, by the way, you can define what high critical means.
Right.
And, you know, I stopped by your booth the other day, and I got to see a little bit of your tool. Talk to me a little bit about how Brinker helps you determine what the risk level should be before you determine that this asset needs to be assigned with this level of risk, which is the prioritization, and then you do something about it.
Certainly. So security tools, the scan engines, you know, whether those are vulnerability scanners or others, they do provide raw security data. So they do provide the base risk score that they identify for that particular asset.
Right.
Now, what Brinker does is we take that into consideration, but we have something called risk factors that are defined by the user, by the customer, in their own environment. So they can identify, here are the asset groups of asset that are supposed to be PCI compliant. You know, so anytime you see a CVSS score 5 or anything, right, you just offset it by 2 points.
Right.
So we are able to, in an automated way, elevate the security risk scores for certain assets or decrease them based on your context, right? So our strategy is really about taking the input from different tools, but then allow the customers to really fine tune that score for their organization.
How much do you do in terms of, you know, I'm sure like most tools, you have like an out of the box default, I don't know what you call your setups, but you know, your policies or whatever. How much do you sort of help or coach your clients to, you know, here's an opportunity to make a decision. You know, don't necessarily have to take the default setting.
Yeah.
What do you do to help clients in that manner?
We have out-of-the-box built-in defaults for every single process the customer has to orchestrate. Mm-hmm. What our solution really excels at is really allowing the customers this flexibility in their tooling to allow them to customize it per their needs. I'll give you another example.
Mm-hmm.
Vulnerability scanning on traditional IT infrastructure. The IT team actually owns patching those assets.
Right.
When it comes to cloud or application security, it's the engineering team. Mm-hmm. Their processes are a lot different than the IT teams, right? So when you are really looking at Brinca as a platform, customers are looking at it as a tool-agnostic approach for defining their cybersecurity policy.
Mm-hmm.
This allows larger organizations that have sometimes grown through mergers and acquisition to have any sort of tooling in their environments across their business units, but then have this centralized policy framework that really allows them to operationalize a unified model across the entire organization.
Can you give me some examples of some testimonials? What are your clients saying about, once they've sort of embraced the concept and started using the tool, what kind of things are you hearing from your clients?
What our customers really like about Brinca is the ability to create a unified cyber risk graph across the organization. It sort of simply becomes like a living, breathing, analogous to a CMDB that gives you a live snapshot mm-hmm. of your organization along with its risk levels across the asset types. Now you have this humongous data set that you can ask any question of, mm-hmm. whether you want to identify your security control gaps, whether you want to identify your compliance gaps, or you simply want to identify, I've got these 50 million findings and vulnerabilities. How do I prioritize so that my team has the 100 that they need to work on right now, today, right? That's what our customers really like about the data that we aggregate. Security is no longer a scanning problem. Every tool you've seen across RSA here, stronger together is the message for 23, RSA 23, and we really believe in that. It's really about how do we make our customers stronger in their cybersecurity posture by bringing in the wide variety of data that these tools provide, but then let them orchestrate their security programs in a unified way.
Great. Well, I want to thank you for your time today. If you want to find out more information about Brinca, go to securityweekly.com/Brinca, RSAC. That's BRINQA, and we're out.
Welcome to RSA Conference 2023. We're here recording live from Broadcast Alley in Moscone West. I'm your host, Adrian Sanabria, and joining me for this interview is Lenny Zeltzer, CISO
Hello.
Of Exonius.
It's good. How are you, Lenny? I'm good.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is, I think this is a great topic, and I think both our companies can actually help with this problem. So today we're talking about how security leaders can demonstrate value by reducing costs. Not something you often hear. I think for years and years, security leaders, the drive was how do we get more budget? How do we get the people we need? How do we get the stuff we need? All of a sudden we're in a I don't know if you want to call it a recession at this point, but we're being asked to maybe lay off people, to reduce costs, things like that. So so where do we start?
First of all, the good news is that overall, surveys that I have read show that people and organizations are willing to spend money on security. So good. Yeah. We're in a good place to be overall. But now we're being asked to be a lot more intentional about where we're spending the money, how we're spending it, and of course, if everyone's budget is slashed, mm-hmm. security's budget will probably be cut as well. And so security leaders need to think about how we're spending the money on our own security projects, but we should also look for a way to help the company save money elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Because yes, as a security leader, I'm thinking about my direct responsibilities to the company, which typically involve managing risk, reducing exposure, taking care of the security responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
But I need to do that while demonstrating value. And that's something that sometimes we don't think about because we're so focused on security. And there are many ways of demonstrating value. You can demonstrate value by saying we've just reduced risk. Mm-hmm. We've just minimized the impact of an incident, for example. But you can also show value by helping the company save money in many different ways.
Right. So that kind of gets into, and that's always an ongoing conversation about, you know, before we talk about helping the company save money, but the direct savings within security, there's always a question of what metrics do I use? You know, what do I report to the board that's not just, you know, like vulnerability counts or mean time to patch, you know, these kinds of, you know, there's always been a question of whether there's a whole lot of value in those, whether that you can relate them directly to risk or not, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So that's is that still a challenge, or are we getting any closer to a consensus on how to demonstrate, you know, how to communicate that value to the business? Can we say we're more efficient now than we were last year? We're using that budget or that money better?
Well, certainly you need to gather metrics that are important, and which metrics you gather are dependent on the maturity level of the organization and what your stakeholders are ready to hear. Mm-hmm. I think it's hard to talk about metrics in general. That's just such a broad topic.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when we're talking about demonstrating value through cost savings, then there are several ways in assuring your board or your peers, as a security executive, you got to think about your peers as well, that you're spending the company's money responsibly and that you have put a lot of thought into where to allocate that limited budget that was assigned to your department. Mm-hmm. I think one way to do it is in the budgeting process. Usually, you are told vaguely how much money the company is willing to allocate to security. Now, you could also, of course, always say, I need more and justify that. But let's mm-hmm. assume that the company says, look, the economy is tough. We're only going to spend so much. Here is roughly what you need to fit into. Now, you've got some questions to ask yourself. How do I spend that money most wisely? And what I propose is the budgeting exercise that you go through that makes sure that questions every single security expense in a way that I'd love to outline in a moment. But if you tell the story to your board, that this is how I thought about assigning budget to specific projects, and this is why I chose those projects, mm-hmm. those expenses, and not others, I think you'll get a lot of credibility, because they yeah. will see you as a person who's not just concerned about security, but who also understands the business reality of the organization.
Yeah, business justifications
yeah,
for,
that's
for,
right.
for your spending.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah. And so what that might mean is you're told to spend X in aggregate, mm-hmm. question everything. Start with a clean slate. If you were starting a program from nothing, where would you spend that money? Now, presumably, you will end up with some ways of justifying your existing projects, your existing personnel, the kind of technologies that you want to deploy in the future. But sometimes you might look at an expense item that you currently are carrying and wonder, wait a second, maybe I don't need it at all. Maybe there's a better way for me to spend that money. And so for every expense item that you think you should fund out of that limited budget that you're assigning to it, you should be able to answer to yourself, why am I spending that money? Not just the benefit to security, but the benefit to the company overall.
Yeah.
And I think you should also be able to answer the question, why am I going to spend that money now? Why not a year from now? Like pose the question that way.
Yeah.
This way, you're not just saying, I'm not funding an improvement to my application security program in that particular way. I'm saying I'm not doing it just yet. Mm-hmm. Or in contrast, if you're saying, this is really important to do now, why now and not later? And then when you're talking to your CFO, your CEO, maybe your board, explain the thought process to them. Mm-hmm. And I think they'll be reassured that you're making good use of the money they allocated to you.
Yeah. We both worked in product roles, and this makes me think a lot of putting together a roadmap and prioritizing, you know, with limited engineering resources, what features are you going to build? Like, what needs to be there now, and what can we push out to the future? Is it kind of a similar thought process?
Yeah, I think that's one way to think about it. Yeah, I think all of us come into the role of security leadership from different backgrounds.
Yeah.
And build on what you have done before and use that framework if mm-hmm. if that works for you. For me, certainly, thinking about managing the security program from the perspective of managing a product, there's always limited resources. That's just yeah. the reality of our world, not just at work, but everywhere, I suppose. And so as security professionals, we're used to saying, you didn't give me enough. Mm-hmm. Look, we all want more. We always want more. Maybe that's a philosophy in life in general. But it's not useful to just come to the CFO and say, you didn't give me enough money. That is not a useful framing. Instead, you need to frame the conversation by saying, here is what I have decided to fund here's how I decided to spend that money within the restraints that you put around me. And here are some of the projects that I decided not to fund.
Yeah.
Because I was limited. And here's the effect on the organization. And now you can have a conversation, and maybe your board, maybe your peers will say, oh, you decided not to fund those projects? We actually think they're important. And now you can decide,
have
should you deprioritize?
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe they'll give you more money. Or maybe they'll say, you know what, we gave you too much. Rarely, but maybe.
Yeah, so one of the first things you that we tend to do in security with a lot of security products is we have to understand what we have. Visibility is a key component, and I think it's used to be the top 20 critical controls. I think it's now down to 18, but the first two are still accurate asset inventory and accurate software asset inventory. How can we, you know, so one of the benefits of that visibility, you know, we it's a necessity for security to understand what's out there and what risks those assets pose. But also it gives us maybe a unique insight into the organization overall and how these assets are used. So how can we leverage that for cost savings as well?
It's an incredible opportunity to show value to the organization beyond the core mission of a typical security team. Yeah, because what do we want as security professionals? Well, we want good funding, obviously, but more directly, what we want in many ways is a smaller attack surface, right? Mm. The fewer devices that are unmanaged, or user accounts that should have been deleted and were not, or SaaS applications that aren't configured the right way, the fewer of these assets are out there, right, the less likely they are to be exploited. So as security professionals, we want to reduce our attack surface.
Right.
It's good for security. We like it when that happens. And it turns out that that's also good for the financial aspect of the organization. And so security professionals who invest into asset management, we know what assets are out there, how they're being used. We know what assets shouldn't be there, what user accounts, SaaS applications, devices are not there. And oftentimes, if you tell the organization from a security perspective, look, this system has been running for 300 days, no one's logged into it, do we really need it? Sometimes the business might say, well, I don't know, what if somebody does need it? Your security concerns, I hear you, but I don't care because I got other concerns related to availability perhaps. But if you approach that conversation by saying, look, here's how much money that system cost us running for 300 days, not being used. And by the way, I found 20 of these, you add up the money and you say, it's good for security, but look, it's not a wise use of the company's resources. And so you can perform your work in asset discovery related to applications that are installed in the system that maybe aren't being used. Bad for security because they're probably not being patched. Bad for licensing costs. You can look at how many users are provisioned into your SaaS application. How many of them are still at the company? How many of them are actually being used? And you can propose to the IT department which user accounts maybe should be deleted. Normally, we say for security, it's bad. Delete them. People don't pay as much attention to security as when you approach them with a financial reason.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the bottom line. You know, and that's, you know, they're more focused on it now. And increasingly, more and more SaaS. Everything is billed usually per seat, per month, you know, and you get those savings almost immediately, right?
It's an incredible
within
way
a month
to show value by finding SaaS applications that maybe you don't know you had. There are ways of discovering them. And it's incredibly valuable to also find SaaS applications that are duplicating some other SaaS applications. And allow the company to ask a question like, do we really need two diagramming tools?
Right.
Or should we pick just one of them?
Standardize.
Standardize. It's better for security because then there's one area where you can focus your security improvements and oversight efforts. It's probably good for security. And so the reason why this is so exciting is because here's an opportunity for security teams to improve security, but also show value by lowering the organization's costs. And if you partner with IT and other stakeholders, you help them find unnecessary spend. You make them look good because they have cut unnecessary expenses. You probably save them some effort as well in managing applications that don't need to be managed. You improve security. And in many ways, you can also point to those savings and say, hey, maybe some of those savings can come back to security. I helped the company save $100,000. Could we take 20 of those?
I would like 10% of...
10%, yes. I mean, maybe, but it's a good conversation to have, because at a broad level, the organization has some money set aside overall to spend on a given year.
Right.
And in many ways, the CFO doesn't really care where the savings will come from.
Right.
They just need to fit into the budget approved by the board. And if you can find the savings elsewhere, you might be able to defend and request to increase the security budget.
So going about that, you know, obviously, first of all, you need to discover those assets, those SaaS applications. You know, you need a method of doing that. But organizationally, who do you need to make friends with? Like, are you going to procurement and saying, hey, can I look through procurement data? You know, is this more of a thing where, like, you know, something in your SASE tooling, you know, is a mix of all of the above? But I think organizationally, who you're talking to is pretty important too, right? Like, you know, if you want to pitch this as, hey, security can you know, save the organization money, are you going straight to the CFO, or is it the controller, or is it the procurement team? Who are you going to?
Yeah, you really need to make friends with a lot of people. And when I say friends, you don't need to be friends. You got to be colleagues who know each other, respect each other, and recognize that they can help each other. That means becoming familiar with the people who are in the finance team, the accounting team, the IT team, the engineering team. It really depends on the organization, but you need to understand whom can you help. Like, just ask yourself, whom can I help by having visibility into potentially unnecessary resources that put the organization at risk security-wise, but also lead to unnecessary spend. And you can talk to the accounting team and say, hey, let's work together to find out what are people expensing for SaaS applications that maybe have never gone through a formal security review.
Right.
Or you can partner with the IT team and say, hey, let's do a review of our user accounts to see where do they reside and do they still have corresponding accounts in our HRIS system, for example. So yeah, the broader your interactions, the more data you will have available to you, it'll help you with your security efforts as you try to minimize your exposure, but also it'll help you find people who can benefit from your effort to improve security, but also find savings.
Love it. Saving the business money. Security saving the business.
That's right.
I never thought I'd hear it, but it totally makes sense. You know, understanding what's used and what's not used. Yeah, reduce attack surface and save the company money. Win, win, win.
We are the heroes of the enterprise.
We are. Very nice. All right. Thank you, Lenny, for joining us today. This is a great conversation. I love positive, hopeful conversations in security. We don't get enough of those. And to find out more about Exonius, please visit securityweekly.com/ExoniusRSAC. If you can't stick around for the rest of the live stream, or if you're catching this afterwards, head on over to securityweekly.com/RSAC to find all of the RSA conference coverage by Cyber Risk Alliance. Thank you, Lenny.
Good to be here.